Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, December 2nd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at MountHealthy.com, that's MTHealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's SweeterHeater.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving break. We did. We went up to Daytona Beach from South Florida to visit with Aunt and Uncle and some cousins. Wanted to be with family for Thanksgiving. That's what it's all about, giving thanks for all the things we need to be thankful for, that's for sure. And I guarantee you, if you on Thanksgiving Day started listing all the things you were thankful for, I'm willing to bet that it took a lot longer than it took to prepare and cook the food for you to get that list down for how much you're thankful. So gotta love it. But, we're thankful for a lot, including all of our fans and sponsors of this radio show. And we thank you very much for tuning in. But we do hope that you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday with family and friends. I want to quickly mention before we get right to our topic today that the Black Osterwolf Friday sale is still going on. It is Cyber Monday, and all of the sales we've been posting all weekend long will end tonight at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The 15% off at FirstStateVetSupply.com. Gone tonight after 11:59. 15% off baby chicks, Stromberg's chickens. 15% off the chicken fountain. 20% off just all of the sale. 15% off the hen saver hen aprons that are already on sale for 25% off. Or 20% off. So I think you'll end up getting 35% off original hen saver hen aprons, which is an incredible price. They've never been that low ever in the history of the company, and absolutely amazing. The hen saver hen aprons, just go to our Facebook page, go to hensaver.com. But all these sales that we've had going on all week, the 15% across the board at randallburkey.com, 10% across the board at brency.com, 20% off particular and certain incubators and hatchers, amazing deals. End tonight. It all ends tonight, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Cyber Monday. These are small mom-and-pop companies. They do not have sales often, if ever, so you need to take advantage of this because this will go away tonight, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So on with our topic, and we've got a great one today. We're very fortunate today to have Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Again, 15% off everything store-wide there, to joining us today. So let's give him a big Chicken Whisperer. Welcome. Click the right buttons and bring him on. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I had a great Thanksgiving with family and enjoying the day today. Got a great topic, and we've got about 50 minutes to get this topic down our throats, no pun intended. And to get all these notes taken, so get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out. Avian infectious bronchitis, today's topic with Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. So get those pens and notebooks ready to take lots of notes today. Interesting topic. We all want to learn more about how to keep our backyard flocks healthy and happy. So I'll turn it over to you, my friend.
Yeah, just before we get started on topic, wanted to just bring to people's attention again, because we have a tendency to forget it if it's out of the news. But avian influenza is alive and well all around the world. And, just be smart to remember the biosecurity. Try to keep people off your farm. Anybody that doesn't need to be there for a specific real purpose doesn't need to be there. It's still giving trouble all around the world. Problems with it in Germany. There's problems with it in Italy and Taiwan, ongoing problem in Saudi Arabia and other places as well. The Chinese have shut down all of their live markets in an attempt to keep it from coming back there. So just be diligent and just be paying attention and things of that nature. Earlier this year, I believe it was around August, there was an outbreak in a commercial broiler flock down in Arkansas. You probably didn't hear much about it, but it was right around in that area, August, September, somewhere in that range. They put the flock down, cleaned up everything, everything went away, and it's not a big deal. But it is out there. It can come back and bite you at any time, and certainly you don't want to be the purveyor of avian influenza in your neighborhood. So just, you know, your due diligence. Just thought I'd mention it before we start on
yeah,
this.
That'll just give all the news media one more reason to, you know, be slamming against back. Oh, back, I can hear it now. Backyard flock, cause of avian influenza, bird flu is here in your neighborhoods. And there's people out there that are just chomping at the bit waiting for this to happen. And I'm sure there's, and I won't name the names, some of the organizations that are out there, and I just waiting to slam backyard poultry, small flock poultry with this. So, yeah, due diligence is where it's at.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. But and again, that's one of the reasons, to a degree, why we're talking about this particular virus today, infectious bronchitis, otherwise known as IB. It is a highly contagious, highly infectious virus, and anywhere in the world where poultry are reared, we find generally bronchitis. And this is a virus that has the ability to change or so-called mutate fairly quickly. So there are many different strains of it. I'm not going to go into all those different strains because I'll mention some, but it's useless to go into all of them. And there is some, you know, there is some cross protection from one to another. Some particular bronchitis strains are indigenous to a particular area of the country or of the world, and specific vaccines are made to include those in the standard strains of bronchitis so that they get, you know, better coverage. But this is a virus that spreads very quickly. It can be part of the problem of what we call air sacculitis, especially if it's complicated with E. coli, Mycoplasma gallisepticum, or Mycoplasma synoviae. Any one of those three certainly can make bronchitis a very miserable disease for your birds. I'm often asked, you know, should I vaccinate my birds for infectious bronchitis? And my reply generally is no. And I also qualify that somewhat with, you know, what's going on in your particular area. If you're, you know, in the show circuit at all, talk to people that are showing, your friends, your extension agent, your state laboratory, if need be, and get a feel for what they're seeing in the backyard type crowd. You don't care what they're seeing in the commercial poultry industry, because that's not where you're going to be. But you're going to want to take a look at it very hard and long before you would invite this particular virus into your flock. It's devastating to a flock, has a tendency to recycle itself back through a flock, can do permanent oviduct damage, and so on. And we'll get to more of that in a minute. This particular virus is called a coronavirus, and it gets its name from the three spikes-like structures that are on the surface of the virus. So therefore, it's called a coronavirus. And with the coronaviruses, there are a number of them that infect animals, and there are also those coronaviruses that infect humans. So you can see coronaviruses in dogs and cats and mice and chickens and cows and pigs and so on. But you'll also see it, the one that would get most people's attention on the human side would be I think it was back in 2004, don't quote me on the exact date, but we had the SARS epidemic in humans some years back, and that was caused by a coronavirus as well. So these things change. They change around pretty quickly and do a lot of damage in their wake. There are many different strains, like I had said earlier. Massachusetts, the Connecticut, there's an Iowa, there's a what they call a JMK, which is local to where I am here. There's an Arkansas 99, which is settled in here as well as down south, and so on. And you know, there are different virulences within these strains. Some are what we call hotter than others. Most people that are following anything about vaccines understand the difference between mild and hot, and some of these can be, you know, can be very very hot. And generally, the way a vaccination program would work is to give the mild ones first and build up to giving the stronger bronchitis vaccines. So there are also some of the different strains of bronchitis that have an affinity or like to settle down in the bird's kidneys, and they can cause kidney damage or nephritis, inflammation of the kidneys, or what we call urolithiasis. You'll know it. You'll see the kidneys all just full of these urates and stuff, and they're red and inflamed instead of pinkish. But some of these viruses do that and cause, and it's not reversible once it happens. But by and large, that's things that we might see more so in the commercial industry than we would see, in the small flockholder backyard type situation. These urates form more or less kidney stones and blockages in the tubules of the kidneys and so on. So and again, that's a permanent type of damage. Other damage that you'll see from bronchitis strains can be from eggshell thinning out, and this would be premature versus an eggshell is thinning out because of the bird's laying cycle is coming to an end, and or the bird is up in age, and the eggshells have been thin for a while, and things of that nature. So we will see eggshells turning quite thin, easily cracked, easily broken. Some of them actually having calcium chalky on the outside, dimpling of the shells on the ends. Rough spots, like looks like little pieces of sandpaper stuck to the shell. Slab-sided eggs, which one side is somewhat flat and the other side is round, and other misshapen formed eggs that you normally would not see in a healthy bird that did not have bronchitis. You'll also see a significant drop in egg production. They may go out of production totally during this whole time. It just depends on how severe the infection is and how long it stays around. Those are all things that you know play into the longevity of this thing, whether it hangs around for a long period of time or a short period of time. The effects on the eggshells of brown egg layers would be a little bit more severe, maybe than some of the white-shelled eggs, and might be something that you would pick up on more readily because of the change in color. It will have a bleaching effect, and again, this is not to be confused by birds that are up in age or well along in their laying cycle and have laid a fair amount of eggs, and there is a normal bleaching process that does take place there. This would be over and above that, or in addition to that. As well as in the interior of the egg suffers as well. We generally, if you were to take an egg and break it out into a frying pan with no heat, you would see different stages of albumin or egg white. And it's a step-up type thing. You would have some of the more watery stuff around the very edges. of the egg, and then it would step up a little bit and come to a little bit higher, thicker albumin, and then step up again and push that yolk up. The yolk's supposed to really be sitting up high in a good fresh egg, and the very, very little runny albumin white around the bottom side. But with a flock that was infected with infectious bronchitis, we would probably see that yolk sitting down quite a bit, not near as much of the real thick albumin egg white. We would see a lot more of it, very, very watery, and the egg would kind of just spread out in the pan. As soon as you drop it in there, she heads to the corners of the pan. And so that those kinds of eggs are not considered grade A quality, and would be downgraded in a processing plant as far as the egg quality is concerned. So there's a lot of things, that get in trouble here with this particular virus, it can have long-lasting effects. The damage to the oviduct can be, in many cases, permanent. So you may see eggs that are crinkly or slab-sided or whatever for the duration of the life of the bird. And in some other cases, they go on and have the poor quality eggshell and poor interior quality and get over it and go on and everything's fine. So it's more or less a crapshoot from that standpoint. And again, depending on the severity of the disease and the longevity of it. The longer it goes on, the worse it gets. Not only does this particular disease cause eggshell problems and oviduct problems and kidney problems, but it also, as you might guess, causes some pretty severe respiratory issues. And this virus on the surface can be somewhat differentiated from others in the way that it spreads. This, for instance, generally will spread in 36 to 48 hours to everybody. And if you've got pens that are close by, let's say it started in pen A and you've got pen B, C, and D next to it, and they're 15, 20 feet apart, probably in within 48 hours, those pens will start to come down with it too. Spread through the air, through any inanimate object, feed buckets, feed scoops, your feet, just the general air blowing around with the birds coughing and sneezing and so on will set this thing off in these other pens. So it doesn't take long till you have everybody on the whole property sick with this particular disease. One of the other differentiating factors you would have to make sure, because one other virus that chickens readily get and affects them almost in the same way, a little bit differently, would be laryngotracheitis, or what we call LT, because it spreads very quickly as well. So the virus has a very, very rapid spread, onset. You'll see it very shortly after exposure, because lots of times we see, diseases take 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 days to really show themselves. They come on slowly.
Right.
This comes on fast. This is a gangbuster type thing. Kick the door
so
in.
You've got a flock of 30 chickens, and you see that first sick one, then you may come out and think, well, let's just see what happens with this. We'll just, maybe you separate it, maybe you don't, but.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you do, but then you come out the next day or two and you've got 36 chickens. Because of that, especially if maybe not so much big commercial operations, but maybe you do have a backyard operation, or maybe your homestead, or if you, I might probably jump in the gun here, but if you all of a sudden have a lot of 75% of your flock has this, is we haven't even gotten to treatment yet really, but is that an automatic call or no? Because it spreads so fast.
I don't think I would cull. I don't think it's going to be, you have 30 dead birds because of the way this thing has a tendency to to move through a flock. I think
I think a
wiser move, from my standpoint is to try to. I mean, there's nothing up front that you can do for it. Let's assume for the moment that you come out today and you've got a couple of sick birds, and you take the wait and see approach, and you come out tomorrow.
Yeah, let's face it. I think the majority of folks, even though we'll preach till we're blue in the face about isolation, you're right. You come out, you have maybe one sick or two sick. I would say the majority of backyard folks are going to do the wait and see thing.
Yeah. Well, I see it all the time. As you well know, I help a fair amount of people. I try to help a fair amount of people, on Facebook and other places. And one of the biggest factors that I can see is there's two things that I see. Not enough maintenance. It's kind of like a car. If you don't air in the tires and you don't put oil in the engine and, you don't change the filter from, at the intervals that it's supposed to be, you're going to be paying the engine man to put a new motor in. And it's kind of like that with chickens. They are pretty self-sufficient for the most part. Maybe that's part of the problem. I don't know.
Right.
But we also see the thing of I didn't know, I didn't think, I didn't notice, I didn't this, I didn't that. I think it's very important. To me, the most important, the most valuable thing you may have on your farm is a 5-gallon bucket.
I know where you're going.
And we've talked about this till we're blue in the face. And a lot of folks have picked up on it. A lot of folks do it, and that's good. But you can. I don't think you can ever, really have enough buckets that you can sit on and just sit out there for a while. Even if it's cold out, sit out there for 10, 15 minutes. It's gonna kill you. But again, when a bird comes across the yard and it's dragging its tail or it doesn't look right today, they're just not having a bad day. There's something going on.
Or it's limping. How many times have you and I both seen a bumblefoot where it's just the size of a golf ball, and you're like, great day, how long before you saw this?
Yeah, and, it's the thing, certain things, and this is a little bit off subject, but you bring up the bumblefoot. I mean, that's something that is extremely hard to cure. I mean, once it gets to that, that golf ball sized or the birds walking on a sizable swelling, and it starts to turn hard, you're going to have to, now you're looking at surgery. Now you have to do something drastic where if you had been, paying more attention or whatever in the beginning, and I understand if you got 200 or 300 birds and you got 3 kids and you're working a job and whatever the case may be, I mean, taking care of 3 kids is a job in itself. I understand that. But, at some point, it's wise to, maybe when they go to roost, maybe that's your best time to go through with a flashlight. Maybe after the kids are in bed, and just go through with a flashlight and see what they look like. You can take a look at their feet and everything else. And the quicker you, the whole point, not to belabor this, the whole point is to the quicker you get and are able to take some sort of action, the better off you're going to be, the thicker your wallet will be. And the better off your birds are going to be. And, this particular disease, is a problem from time to time. Not so much in the backyard, a small flock holder situation, but I've been asked numerous times here recently about this disease, and I thought it would be wise to come back through. We've done it before, but I don't think we've done it in a fair amount of time. So it's time to maybe talk about it again, so that hatching season will be pretty much here in the next month or so, and people will be filling up the incubators and hatching like crazy. And because I know folks that that do vaccinate for this, but they vaccinate improperly and they don't do themselves nor their flock any justice, and we'll get to that in a moment. But just a little bit of due diligence, paying attention, listening to the birds. Great time to listen to them is at night when they go to roost. Just walk inside, close the door, you don't even need a flashlight, unless you want to identify the bird that's sneezing or coughing or snicking or choking or whatever. But it's the best time to listen to them. They'll tell you what's going on right there. But at any rate, we'll move on. So besides the oviduct problems, the slab-sided eggs and misshapen eggs, rough eggs, you may even get soft-shelled eggs out of this. the thin eggshells and bleached out shells and chalky shells and all that kind of stuff, you are going to see some respiratory symptoms. And again, the rapid spread, rapid onset. One of the things you're going to see is watery eyes. And this can come in two forms, with or without swelling. It just depends, as a general rule, if there's a secondary bacterial invader here coming along with this, which complicates matters. So go back to the beginning where I said E. coli, Mycoplasma gallisepticum, Mycoplasma synoviae, these things will complicate this disease and make the disease drag itself out, cause this swelling in the face and the eyes and all of this kind of stuff. So, you know, those are all things to watch for. I would suggest that people get a baseline of what's going on in their flock by having a flock analysis done. You know, and it's something you can save up for, you know. I mean, it's to get it all done at one time, you know, might be a little bit much. But if you were to take and have a couple of samples sent off to an independent laboratory and get an idea of what's going on in your flock, and you don't have to tell the world, and that independent laboratory is not going to tell the world, but you will know. And you will become a better manager. You'll know what's going on in that flock. So when you start to see some respiratory issues, you can say, ah, it's this, it's that, or the other thing, because I know because I've seen the test results were positive for MG, or they were positive for bronchitis, or whatever the case may be. And you have a leg up on it at that point. A lot easier to manage it when you know something is going on rather than guessing as to what's going on. And not that you can't guess and be pretty accurate. I do that every day. But much, much better to have all the information that you can up front and go about it in that fashion. Much smarter to do it that way. Right. And, you know, so it costs, you know, $100. So you save up for it. You know, you sell some eggs, you sell some birds, whatever the case may be, and, you know, you get it done. Anybody wants that information, I can certainly get it for them. At any rate, you know, you're going to see what you're going to see with them besides the watery eyes with or without the swelling. You might see some snotty nose, what we call a rattle deep down in the chest, some labored breathing, wheezing, again, drops in egg production, interior egg quality be affected, eggshell color and quality. If generally, as chicks, this can affect chicks as well. We would see them generally huddling up, almost like they have coccidiosis, so you have to be careful. But you would also see some respiratory symptoms at the same time, stretching their necks out in front of them, open mouth, gasping, breathing, you know, all of those kinds of things, acting like they're cold, standing around, chilled, looking for heat, never want to come out from under the heat, those kinds of things. You know, and you have to put it together like a puzzle, you know. Yeah. Birds that have coccidiosis may do the same thing, stand there droopy-winged, fall asleep standing up, puff up in the corner, may seek out a heat source depending on the weather, you know, and those kinds of things. So I think that, you know, what you do is you just have to watch and look for the symptoms. And half of this stuff is knowing the symptoms and being able to try as best you can to separate them out. How fast is it spreading? Is there eye involvement? Is there nasal discharge? Is there mortality? Is there blood coming from the mouth? Because there's really only one disease that you're going to probably encounter in your lifetime that's going to give you blood coming out of the mouth, and that's the laryngotracheitis, see? And those birds have a tendency, so for a differential diagnosis, by looking at them, okay, without doing an actual necropsy, you would see birds that have the laryngotracheitis make a cawing sound, and they sit back on their tail and stretch their head out in front of them. Okay? And then you would be smart to get a tracheal swab and swab the trachea and see if you can pull up any blood. You do it gently. Take the swab, go down through the glottis, which is the opening in the floor of the mouth right behind the tongue, and you gently push it down, twist it going down, and twist it coming back up. Shouldn't take you more than 10-15 seconds maximum. no damage to the bird, and you look at the swab. If there's blood on it, pretty good indication that you've got some laryngotracheitis going on. And then
would the blood be a symptom that you would see later, even though it's very quick, as these symptoms come to play? Is the blood something you'll see later on, or is that a later symptom that you might see once you're starting to put all these other symptoms together? And I guess that would follow up my next question. I guess at this stage, would just like with most things with humans, you may not have every single symptom
right.
for every disease, but would the blood specifically be a later symptom in the development of this?
Yeah, it generally, like let's just say for like with laryngotracheitis, it wouldn't be one of the first things you see right away, but you would see eye involvement, the swelling around the conjunctiva of the eye. You might see some nasal discharge, but generally with the LT, because of where the virus lives, it lives in the bird's trachea, and it makes that trachea bleed. And we've talked about this numerous times before. And the blood running down the trachea, then going into smaller and smaller bronchi and mesobronchi towards the lungs, as it goes downhill, it starts to coagulate, and then they start slinging their head back and forth. I have a case now where somebody failed to vaccinate; they just got behind they have vaccinated every year and not had a problem since they went on a vaccination program quite some years ago. And a group of birds, they just got behind and everything else, and they broke with LT here last week, 10 days, and gotten ugly, and slinging blood and doing all the other things. And the blood itself didn't actually show up till 4, 5, 6 days later after the initial infection showed up. So, and then again, that depends on the strain of the virus that's attacking the bird. The more virulent the virus, the quicker and the more blood that they'll start slinging. So we generally don't see the blood slinging so much with the LT because many times birds are infected from somebody who didn't do their due diligence vaccination-wise, quarantine the birds or use the hot strain of the vaccine or something like that. But see, with this bronchitis, if you use the wrong vaccine on the birds, you can have mortality just from the vaccination right off the bat. Within days after vaccination, they start croaking, and so you have to be careful. That's why I said earlier on, in a vaccination program, we would use a very mild strains of the bronchitis first, and then come back with a heavier. More virulent strains later to build some across-the-board immunity because the amount of immunity, none of the viruses from any of the research work that I've seen are 100% effective. Some of them are in the high 90s, and others, as far as their ability to cross-protect, there is some cross-protection, so that's why they lump two or three of them together, like a Massachusetts, Connecticut, something like that. Those are two different strains that they put together. There's some cross protection one against the other, so it makes the whole thing better than any one of them by themselves. So, that being said, those are mild strains, but the more virulent one that you would use later on in a vaccination program would be what we call a MAS 2 or what we call a Holland strain, and those, if they're used early on, can cause mortality, and usually do. And they're just, it's another thing to make it clear. Same thing with pox. The young bird pox can be used at day of age, but the old bird pox, you got to wait till they're 5 weeks of age. And the reason for that is you give the older bird to the day-old chick, can't handle it. It's too strong, and you end up with a case of pox of birds that are dead or, those kinds of things. So you just have to be careful what you're doing, and try to recognize the symptoms as best you can. And this disease, if you do basically nothing, because you really can't, once there, this is not a disease where you would find out you have it and then vaccinate to try to stop it. That would just pile up dead birds. This particular one doesn't work that way. So usually you'll see this run its course anywhere from, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks. It'll go away and everything will start to get better. Those birds that were laying the slab-sided eggs and so on and so forth may or may not get better. The eggshell quality usually will return to normal in most cases, but not all. You know, morbidity is birds that stand around and act sick versus mortality, which are birds that die. It's not uncommon at all with flocks like this that come down with this in a natural setting from a field outbreak to have what we call 100% morbidity. In other words, every bird showing some sort of symptom to the disease. We don't always see that so much with, like the laryngotracheitis. While it does spread very quickly, not quite, in my opinion, as quickly as the bronchitis does. So there's a few things. Again, it's how much you pay attention to it, because if you don't, you know, if you don't pick up on any of the symptoms, you'll not be able to really try to figure it out until it's really got a toehold in the flock, and then, you know, it just makes things worse. That's all. Some things you can do if the weather is appropriate. Let's say you did have a outbreak of bronchitis, and that is to move more air. Okay, so. If this were to happen in the summertime, I'd open the place up and get some fans and suck the air out and get fresh air in as quick as I could. And that can help with the virulence of this and the length of time that that this will hang around in the flock. You can also, if this happens when you've got chicks in a brooder, raising the brooder temperature you know, generally can help, but you still need to move some air, okay? If a flock is in egg production and you're counting on the eggs for selling and you get this, this is not something that's going to pass through the egg and be going on to people, so you don't have to worry about it from that standpoint. But what you do have to worry about is that it's not uncommon to see, you know, 50-60% of your egg production go down the tube because of it. So, you know, it's some of the things that you have to watch for that are there. And, again, the more you pay attention to the detail, the better off you're going to be. And, excuse me. Some of the other strains that we talked about, I talked about the JMK, which is indigenous to this area, Arkansas 99 to down south, and here, Massachusetts, Connecticut, they're all northeastern strains. There's an Iowa, there's a Florida, there's a Mass 2, there's a Holland. So you can see there's a whole bunch of them. And, you know, some of them they will put several of these together, you know, in a vaccine bottle, and just depends on what you're trying to do, you know, with that overall flock. So that's there's no point in going further into the amount of different strains, just so that you know there are different ones, and it doesn't mean that out in California they wouldn't use a mass con. They will use whatever their laboratory there tells them is going on in their flock. And I think that most of North America now, probably at some point, at least in laying type chickens, will use the mass con. Not sure what all of them out that way are using as far as the other types of bronchitis are concerned. So we get to a point now where you're going to want to look at a necropsy on these birds. Generally, one of the easy ways to do this is to open up the chest cavity and look at the bronchi. I talked about those before. And generally, you'll see what we call a cheesy plug or a casus plug in the bronchi itself, cutting off the air. And it's a whitish to off-white looking, soft to hard, cheesy looking mess. And the bird's air sacs, they can be anywhere from completely cloudy where you can't see through them to just slight cloudiness to a thick mucus covering that actually is quite sticky that is covering the air sacs, hence the term air saculitis. Some birds, there's a possibility of some birds with this particular disease becoming internal layers. So you may see shells, complete eggs in the body cavity. You might see the yolks or ovums in the body cavity. It just depends. And this is not to say that if you've got a bird that's become an internal layer that it has bronchitis, that you have to differentiate between the two. And with the lack of any other symptoms and stuff, with a bird that's an internal layer versus this type of problem, you're probably looking at a bird that's just got some issues hormonally and become an internal layer for whatever the reason may be. The trachea of the bird may become inflamed, but it wouldn't necessarily be bleeding like the trachea of a bird with laryngotracheitis. But there would be some inflammation there, too, to see that. I want to throw this out here for there are people that buy the vaccine and vaccinate once, and this using the vaccine once will not give you long-term protection. So if your intent is to buy it and use it once, you're better off to save your money and not expose your flock to a vaccine virus that can at any time come back through your flock and cause havoc with you, can mutate, it's a possibility. So I don't recommend using it. We used to sell it years ago, and as the ongoing research got better and better with this stuff, it was clear to me that it was more of a problem for backyard folks and small flock holders to vaccinate for this particular disease, unless you have the problem in your area and you're advised to do so by somebody with some knowledge of your area, such as your extension people and so on. But I would not do it based on what the commercial people in your area may be doing. That would be a total mistake, in my opinion. And you base it on history, what you're going to do. And by using it once, if let's say you used it once on your birds and they made it through it, and there will be a reaction to it. Sometimes it's severe, again, depending on underlying factors, E. coli, the mycoplasma, so on. And these birds have this reaction, they go through it and everything else. If they never see that virus again, the immune system is not going to continue to build antibodies. And the longer it goes without seeing that that disease entity again, the less antibodies that there are, and the immune system will eventually lose its ability to respond very quickly. Not to respond, but respond very quickly. See, that's the whole idea of a vaccine, is that if a bird has seen the antigen, which would be the disease organism, and sees it on a regular basis, then you're getting those antibodies from the vaccine that you gave to continually build, and the army is at ready, and they're ready to pounce on any bronchitis virus that comes through the door. But if it doesn't see it, it isn't going to have the army waiting forever. And therein lies the problem. And the other problem is that the only other way to do it is to do it about every 90 to 120 days. Well, it interferes with everything. It interferes with going to a show because you're using a live virus. It interferes with egg production. It interferes with hatching season. It interferes with everything. So unless you really need it, I'd stay away from it. Okay? And, prevention, I don't know how you prevent it other than don't get involved in it unless you have to. And if you know people that are using the vaccine, stay away from them. And if you have a problem in your area, address it. Address it with somebody that knows what's going on, that can direct you on how to use the vaccines. Generally, there's multiple ways to give this vaccine through the drinking water, through the eye in an eye drop, through the nostril in a opening in a nostril. There's a spray vaccination, and the more severe reaction that you would have would be from spraying it over top of the birds in a fine particle and letting them inhale that, because the deeper it gets down into their respiratory system, the tougher the reaction is going to be. Eye drop can do the same thing. Intranasal in the nostril can do the same thing. So if I were going to do this, I would probably want to do it in the drinking water. Okay. But as far as prevention is concerned, just stay away from anybody that you know had the problem, has the problem, or has sick birds, period. And you'll do yourself a huge, huge favor. So that's about all I got, Andy, as far as that's concerned.
No, that's good stuff, Peter. We're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, I've got a question in the chat room, and we'll see if there are any other questions about our topic today in the chat room as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back with more Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Baum right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at mcmurrayhatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, another great episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. We do have a question in the chat room for you, Peter.
Sure.
Christmas chick, a neighbor, a friend, a family member, needed to defrost their freezer, and in that freezer was like a 40-pound bag of popcorn, not popped, just the kernels. But like a 30 or 40 pound bag, something ridiculous like that, and she was wondering if that would be okay to give chickens on an occasional snack, or if there's a way she could, make it softer, soak it for a minute, or just forgo it all together and not worry about it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah, I would be concerned with how long it had been there. And, you know, corn has a naturally occurring mold. I'm going to say this, and because I would do this if it were my own. When in doubt, throw it out. And because corn carries a mold called aflatoxin, and it can be very, very harmful to birds. The Federal Grain Inspection Service monitors corn nationwide for the aflatoxin and ochratoxin and several other different toxins. We did a show on it a year or so ago, maybe more, and that causes permanent liver damage. They get lesions in their mouth and their throat. It is aflatoxin itself is the most potent naturally occurring carcinogen known to man. So I'm going to say from my perspective to err on the side of caution, toss it and be done with it. That's what I would do. If it were mine, that's exactly what I would do.
Okay. Very good. And she was saying, I wonder if I could plant it and actually grow some popcorn.
Know, but, you know, I mean, if you want to experiment around that way, that would be fine. But these toxins that are on corn, a lot of your foreign countries have a lot of trouble with it because they don't have the facilities to properly dry corn. That's why when you bring corn to a mill and sell it, if it isn't down, dried down to a reasonable, I can't remember the number, but it has to be dried down to a particular percentage of moisture before they'll put it in with their own corn. Because if you don't, then it starts to mold. And if you bring corn in and it's not at the right moisture level, they charge you extra for having to, you know, to run it through their dryer and dry it down to the proper moisture level. And that's one of the reasons why they move corn around. You can't let corn just sit in the bin forever. You've got to move it. You've got to get, you know, otherwise it'll mold, heat up, and, you know, it can even cause fires and stuff. So, I mean, I don't think I would do it. That's just my personal interpretation of that one.
Find out chicken. If I know Christmas Chick, she will take your advice, as she always does. She loves tuning in when you're on, and she'll find another use for it, I am sure. So no worries there. Well, Peter, thank you very much for joining us today. Another great and pertinent topic for us. Can't talk today. Topic for us backyard chicken keepers. And we appreciate you always coming on every Monday, folks. If you didn't hear the entire show, no worries. This show, like all the rest, are archived for your listening pleasure, iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and right here on BlogTalkRadio.com. You can listen to its entirety within maybe 10 or 15 minutes after the show ends here in just a couple of minutes. So no worries. Well, Peter, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you back here next Monday, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. And that's going to wrap up another great show, thanks to the Chicken Doctor. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. No show tomorrow, but, folks, we return this Wednesday with another really fun and outrageous show, Garden Wise Living with Arlena, this Wednesday. This Thursday, I welcome poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D. And so, in fact, I think this Thursday is Q&A, questions and answers. So you can we'll start doing that, post your questions on Facebook and whatnot, and we'll have her do some Q&A for small flocks. And then, of course, it'll be Friday. So no show tomorrow, but we would love for you to tune back in on Wednesday with Garden Wise Living and Thursday with Poultry Today with Dr. McRae. So have a wonderful, wonderful day, folks, and we'll see you back here Wednesday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody.